You are listening to a free podcast of The Majority Report with Sam Cedar. To support the show and receive nearly an hour extra material daily, become a member today at majority.fm. Resistance is futile.
The Majority Report with Sam Cedar, where every day's casual Friday. That means Monday is casual Monday. Tuesday, casual Tuesday. Wednesday, casual hump day. Thursday, casual Thurs. That's what we call it. And Friday, casual Shabbat. The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
It is Friday, November 23rd, 2012. My name is Sam Cedar. This is the award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live to tape in the literal, though not metaphorical, shadow of the New York Times building in the fashionable Dollar Lunch District of New York City. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, I am still napping after Thanksgiving. Couldn't be bothered to get up, but I didn't want to leave you empty-handed. So you will hear an interview I did with Bill Black from A Ring of Fire. Bill Black is a professor at the University of Kansas. I don't know, I'll double-check that in a second. And was a former regulator, was involved in a lot of the criminal investigations with the, I've got all that tryptophan or whatever it is from the Turkey savings and loans crisis. And for you members, an archive show back from 2005. Zach Galifianakis and Ralph Nees. I don't even know if I'm on that one. I think it could have been just Janine. I can't remember. I have no recollection. But assume we were talking about Ralph Nees, about Bush's attempt to privatize Social Security. And I assume we were talking to Zach Galifianakis about marijuana. That would be my guess.
It's in my hands now.
We'll see if he was funny back then. I don't know. So sit back and enjoy this show. We'll be back live on Monday. And now, without any further introduction, will be the Bill Black interview in two parts, starting now. So, Bill, let's start with what we know and what we've been told for, well, actually, we've been told this for quite some time, that we're facing a debt crisis, and it is all coming to head where I guess the debt crisis plays a role in what is coming to head in what has been known as the fiscal cliff. Give me your sense of what we've been sold leading up to this so-called fiscal cliff.
Well, we've been sold a bill of goods, of course, but the background of all of this is a confusion of cause and effect. So when you have a Great Recession, lots of people get unemployed and incomes fall dramatically. Income tax revenues fall. Property taxes are off the value of real estate. That fell substantially because of the bursting of the bubble. People buy fewer things, so sales tax revenues fall. So governments have a lot less revenue. And simultaneously, there's a lot greater need for their services, particularly for things like unemployment insurance and food stamps and such. And so it is absolutely predictable that a severe recession is going to produce very large budgetary deficits. And indeed, it should, because that's part of what economists call the automatic stabilizers. And these are counter-cyclical policies. That means it fights against the direction of the business cycle. So if the business cycle is tearing, you know, pulling you down into a deep recession, these things mean that you don't go into as bad a recession that you come out of it more quickly and that it's less severe in the whole process. And there's good evidence of this, that these countercyclical policies work quite well. However, there is this whole branch of folks who decided that all these things that we've known for 75 years must not be true. And they decided to conduct an experiment. And they used Europe for their place to do that. And so they did the opposite. Instead of having a countercyclical policy of stimulus, they decided, let's have a pro-cyclical policy. Let's make the business cycle worse by having austerity. So they increased taxes and decreased services, and they threw the entire Eurozone back into recession, an utterly gratuitous recession. And
now, Bill, let me just back up for a minute here, too, because one of the things that we've been told, even by the president over the course of the past 4 years, is that if families have to tighten their belt, government needs to tighten their belt. And that's exactly what essentially Europe did. And we've seen the results of this. I mean, a couple of different societies are practically falling apart because of these austerity measures. But this notion that if somehow we're running a deficit, or that somehow the there's a government economy and a private economy, and they don't have any relationship with each other, and that if government is borrowing money, it somehow is preventing the private economy from borrowing money. Can you just address that?
Yeah. It's, of course, complete nonsense when you have millions and millions of people out of work. There are no trade-offs at all. What there is in a recession is quite clear. There's insufficient demand so that you can employ everybody. And that means that private sector demand is already grossly inadequate, and it's not going to pick up, because why are you going to pay money to workers to build more things when you can't sell them? That would be stupid. And businesses don't do that. So the stimulus has to come out of the governmental sector, and it's exactly the opposite. If the consumers are pulling in their belts, not spending, that is going to produce the paradox of thrift. In a recession, that's going to make the recession far worse. And so that's precisely the time when the government needs to spend. And as you say, we have the results of the experiment. Europe went this route. And it was a disaster. It still is a disaster. Unemployment averages in the Eurozone over 12%. We're under 8%. So you can see it's half again as bad. But as you noted as well, this understates the degree, because it's lumpy. And in places like Spain and Greece, there are Great Depression levels of unemployment. Over 25%, and among the youth, the unemployment is over 50% in both of those countries. It's 56% in Greece now. So, and in whole regions like southern Spain, Andalusia, it's over 30% unemployment, and it's tearing Europe apart. They're literally in danger of producing civil wars in places like Greece.
Now, a country like Greece actually had a debt crisis. In other words, can you please just, because we hear this debt crisis is thrown around as if it's something that actually exists in this country. And give me a sense of why Greece's debt crisis is a real debt crisis, whereas our so-called debt crisis is not necessarily a crisis.
Really excellent point. So there are two major things that are massive differences. One, Greece doesn't have a sovereign currency. It joined the euro. And when it did that, it gave up an essential element of sovereignty and exposed itself to what even the right wing calls the bond vigilantes. So when they get in debt, they are in disastrous circumstances because they owe money in a currency that isn't one they issue. They owe it typically in the euro, and they're not an issuer of the euro, so they can't produce more euros. And so Greece is actually the only country of any of the ones that is being talked about that actually had a really severe debt crisis before this crisis began. Right? They did, in fact, without a sovereign currency, you're going to have to balance the budget. And they didn't come close, and they lied about it. But countries like Spain and Ireland were running budget surpluses. So when people say there's a debt crisis, well, yeah, there is a debt crisis now in Spain and Ireland, but it's because of the Great Recession and having the euro. The United States doesn't have either of those circumstances. So our debt ratios are much lower. And indeed, they're not even back to the levels that they were in, say, 1953, right? So for years, we've run deficits larger than this. And while we were doing it, we beat the fascists in World War II. We came out of the Great Depression. We produced full employment, and we began the great governmental programs like the GI Bill and the interstate highway system. So, you know, this is not remotely a crisis. Japan, for example, has a sovereign currency, and its debt ratio is twice as large as Greece, and it can still borrow money at essentially zero.
Now, I know this is slightly remedial, but I'm not sure that people understand this enough because we see it bandied around so much. But what is theoretically the crisis? The crisis, it seems to me, and please correct me if I'm wrong, is that we can't get people to loan to us anymore because our deficit is so large that people who are potential loaners to us, potential bondholders, don't think the risk is worthwhile. That is essentially what a debt crisis would lead to, right? I mean, that's why we fear a debt crisis.
Perhaps it can't lead to that when you have a sovereign currency like the United States. In fact, it isn't even necessary to borrow money through bonds. The truth is, and everybody in finance knows it, that we create money by keystrokes on a computer. So, for example, if you paid your income taxes by sending in cash, you know what the IRS does with the cash? It shreds it, right? People think of cash because, you know, it's what's used to. We look in our wallet, there's these bills, but that's not how money is created. The fact that we go through these bonds at all is actually an artifact of the old gold standard type thing. So at first level, even a bond crisis can't happen because we wouldn't ever need bonds. But second, you can see what the bond markets are pricing the risk of lending money to America as. And the bond markets, even on very long term, say that the risk is virtually non-existent, that it is incredibly safe to lend to America. So, again, there is no bond crisis in the United States. We can, in fact, borrow, and we don't need to borrow in terms of repaying debts. So the real concern supposedly was hyperinflation. And, of course, they keep going, you know, hyperinflation's right around the corner and inflation is trivial.
So now that we've established that we don't have that crisis, we're going to take a break. And when we come back, let's talk about what has been in the works under the auspices of this supposed crisis. And essentially what we're seeing played out is almost a version of Naomi Klein's shock doctrine. We're sold this notion of a crisis, and now the next shoe is about to drop. We've got to take a break. When we come back, we will literally put ourselves under that shoe.
Drill, not star, baby star.
That woman is an idiot.
Here it is.
the Republicans' health care plan for America. Don't get sick.
If you think that's a fair ad, okay, then you're a Republican and an asshole. Have at it, Hoss. Be in that party. Despicable, man.
They're the bad guys.
Analysts, taxpayer bailout.
Yeah, that's not true.
When Obama won, the reason why we worked so hard for him,
we didn't want a garden variety politician.
Taking a stand, not just cutting deals.
That's what vision is. Right. That's what vision is.
The Best of the Left podcast. The best of the truly liberal media. Edited, organized, and mixed. Only at bestoftheleft.com.
So, Bill, in the last segment, we talked about the fallacy of a debt crisis in this country. We talked about the proper role for government if we want to avoid the disastrous effects of austerity that we have seen in Europe. So with all that in the backdrop, we are coming towards a fiscal cliff, or the supposed fiscal cliff. We are also talking, we now have seen documents this past week that were released that showed President Obama's last offer for a grand bargain with John Boehner a couple of years ago that was scuttled actually by a Senate deal that was that gummed up the works. But one of those things that were in there were cuts to Social Security via a change in the way that we calculate the rate of inflation for the elderly. And for all of us, and also a rising of the Medicare age. Tell us about how this is basically a grand betrayal.
Right. So you talked about a shoe coming down, and of course, what's really coming down is a jackboot, and it's being smashed down on the poorest of Americans and such. So the fondest dream, here's the key background, the fondest dream at all times since the creation of Social Security, of Wall Street, is to privatize it, right? You get a stream of literally trillions of dollars to invest, and they get to charge fees, and they would make literally hundreds of billions of dollars. So that is the great goal. Here's the problem for them. Social Security is a brilliant program. People love it. It has incredibly low costs. It has changed life dramatically, where in America to be old, elderly back in World War II was to be in poverty 50% of the time, and where people were literally eating cat food and such, to a dignified life and that has dramatically reduced poverty among the elderly. And every survey done shows that Social Security is immensely popular and that people don't want it cut. And that includes Republicans, right? Even a majority of Republicans don't want it cut. So you would think they'd have a very difficult time trying to get a supposedly progressive Democratic president to do it. And, of course, only a Democratic president can engage in the great betrayal of the safety net, because for a Republican in national politics to do it is suicidal. So just like only Nixon could go to China, only a Democrat can begin the process of unraveling the safety net. It won't be done in 1 year. It'll be done over 20 years, but it would make it politically safe for Republicans to attack it, because after all, Obama would be accepting the false Republican analysis that says we can't afford the safety net, and the safety net is harmful to America. It makes us uncompetitive with China, and we actually have to make people much poorer and erode and unravel this safety net. So that was the background, and as you say, they need to create and generate a moral panic, we call it in sociology, right? So you have to make it a faux morality argument. You heard Romney say it was immoral to have debts, and we're hurting our kids and our grandkids, as if austerity, which would throw the parents of millions of our kids and grandkids into poverty, force the kids and the grandkids into poverty. You know, it's just utterly insane. Austerity is the most immoral strategy. It most burdens the kids and the grandkids. So they opportunity when they saw the Great Recession and the deficits. And a Republican billionaire from Wall Street, Pete Peterson, has been creating all these fake Democratic and bipartisan groups like the Third Way to argue in favor of privatizing Social Security and creating this panic. So Obama attempted in July 2011, he actually reached an agreement in principle with John Boehner, the Speaker of the House, the Republican Speaker of the House, to institute the Great Betrayal. And the Great Betrayal, as you said, consisted of massive cuts to social services, modest increases in tax revenues, and beginning to unravel not only Social Security, but Medicare, Medicaid as well. Now, the irony, of course, is this was a massive program of austerity. Let's go back to July 2011 when this is happening. Unemployment was 9.1%. The CBO, the Congressional Budget Office, says that the so-called fiscal cliff would force us back into recession, would increase unemployment substantially, as it has in Europe. So what if Obama had succeeded in getting a deal with Boehner to impose the Great Betrayal in July 2011? Unemployment would have risen from 9.1% to well over 10%, and it would have been going up every month leading into this election we've just held.
So in some respects, the intransigence of the Republicans saved the economy in some respects.
That's right. The
President
Tea Party and the Senate liberals saved Obama from Obama. Right. So this would have been catastrophic for the nation, and it would have doomed Obama. It would have wiped out the Democrats in the Senate and such. It would have just been the worst conceivable thing.
Well, Bill, we just have about 30 seconds left. So
they're trying to do the same thing again.
And now they're trying to do the same thing again. And this is something that obviously we need to push back upon and protect things like Medicare, protect things like Social Security. I hope to talk to you more in the coming weeks about this, because this is a real problem. And I think people really need to have an understanding of why this is being offered and under what auspices and exactly what the implications for it are. Bill Black, thanks so much for taking the time to explain part of that story for us.
Yeah, beware. We're from Wall Street and we're here to help you.
Indeed.
And I will pay.